I've got one of life's characters with me. I love this lady. Now, I haven't seen her for a long, long time. She's had her own businesses, closed them down, sold them, gone around the world, come back. She's a character. She takes no garbage off anybody. She's a strong-willed lady. Her name is Michelle Simpson. We call her Mish. She's been involved now with the British Style Collection, which has just been on now. Mish, hi.
Hi, Pete.
I can't believe you're actually here in between a million trips.
I know. It is a rarity.
Now, you've had your own businesses. You've done an awful lot with your life, haven't you?
Yes. I've crammed quite a bit in, yeah.
So and also a sports fanatic.
Yes. Well, I remember the days when we took you down to West Kirby and taught you to windsurf.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't going to mention it. So she's got me on the windsurf at the lake, and it's a windy day, but she hasn't told me how to turn round, and I'm going straight for the wall. Do you remember that?
I do.
And it was your board.
It was.
Yeah. You've always been into those sort of sports, haven't you? And in fact, you had a bad accident.
I did. I had a horrific accident out in the Philippines on a remote island. I was out there, unfortunately, on my own, and I was kite surfing. And yeah, I had a freak accident. It's not something that would normally happen, but when you're playing around with dangerous sports, you sort of have to understand that things can go wrong. And it unfortunately did. And I was 9 weeks in hospital there and then got flown back and spent, I think it was 2 months here. Yeah. Yeah.
Did it put you off stuff?
Well, it hasn't put me off. It's just stopped me from doing any sports because the injuries were that bad that they have taken an effect on my mobility. So, yeah, no more extreme sports. So anything with impact, that's finished.
All right. Yeah. You miss it?
Yeah, terribly. Yeah.
You really were an exciting woman, weren't you? You just didn't, nothing stopped you, nothing fazed you.
No, I don't have any fear. I think that's the problem.
Is that what it was?
Still don't have any fear.
Oh, fear. Now, you've been travelling, you've been doing all sorts, but right now, you've just got there with you these unbelievable bags. What's this about?
Well, I was travelling out in Asia, as you know. I mean, I'm out there quite a lot, and I decided that I wanted to go to Burma. And as everybody knows, Burma is now called Myanmar, and it's been a closed country up until 2015 when they changed the government and they had the elections. And I was travelling around and found these baskets that were hand-woven using recycled plastic strapping, the stuff that goes around crates. And I brought them back for friends. And everywhere I went, everybody was stopping me, asking me, where did you get it from? So things changed, and I'd been working on a project over in China, and that didn't work out. So I decided that I would try these baskets, took them to a trade show, took a load of orders, but actually had no way of knowing how I was going to get them to the UK or who was making them. So I got on a plane, went over to Yangon, started in Yangon, went to the British Embassy. They laughed at me. Said I was actually going to be doing something completely impossible as there was no infrastructure. I ignored them, obviously, because I'd gone all that way and I was determined to make it happen. It took me a couple of flights, 6 hours in a car and a couple of cyclo drivers, and I managed to track down the villages. I'm working with two villages out there, and they are a flight between each village. So one style is in one part of the country and another style is made in the other part. So then when I realised how difficult it was going to be because there's no infrastructure, they're still travelling around on bicycle out there, and maybe one person in the village will have a motorbike. I had to do a lot of working, and I asked them whether they would be interested in making them for me. So we thought, well, we'll do a test run. And they delivered 2 weeks ahead of schedule, which, you know, when you're working with a country that's so underdeveloped, you don't expect that to happen. And you're looking for all of the pitfalls that are going to happen. So it all arrived in Yangon at the bus station for the first time. It came on a bus. But what I hadn't realised that it had actually come by oxen cart to the bus stop first. So those are probably the pictures that you've seen with me loading the oxen cart.
Where did they get the ideas of doing the bags? Beautiful bags.
Well, they had all of this stuff flooding in from Asia, like China and India, on their imports. And also the other thing they use, the plastic strapping, is to wrap around the crates. And you'll notice some of the bags on the plastic strapping will have like little tomatoes or it'll be a flower. That identifies what's in the crates because they don't have printers to print a label. So this plastic strapping has these little icons on it. And when they finished with it, it was just being chucked onto the side of the road. So they started to collect it. And it was actually a couple of the weavers that saw that they could use it instead of the cane. And it was their idea. It wasn't my idea. I've just given them a network to be able to expand. Yeah. And also what I wanted to do was encourage the younger generation to stay in the villages and carry on that tradition. They are farmers most of the year, actually in the dry season, and in the rainy season they don't have anything to do, so that's when they start weaving those baskets. So I have to monitor how many they can do within a time frame and everything, because I try to manage it so it becomes ethical. Otherwise, if I was to say to them, well, I want you to weave 10,000, they'd be doing that all year, and then that would have an effect on their livelihoods with the farming.
This is great. So there's a bigger picture. It's not just about those beautiful baskets there that are with you right now. You're actually bringing life back to these villages. And this is what I saw on Facebook. And this is why, I mean, I've known you anyway, and I've been a fan of yours, you know, because you've always been successful. But I was surprised that the story behind it, and this is why I wanted to tell the story, so you could exploit them if you wanted to.
Oh, totally. And there has been people over there already. They've seen what I'm doing and they've gone straight over there and said to somebody in Yangon, right, I want to buy every basket in the country. But I've got a relationship now which has been built on trust. I pay them all of their money before I leave the country. So they don't start work until they've had all of the money for the baskets. So that's a big risk for me in itself. But I felt that I needed to build that relationship with them. Now, if they were to be approached by somebody else, they might not have that same view and expect them to fund it. Well, first of all, they couldn't fund it because they haven't got the money. And the other thing is I work where I did my research in finding out how much they supply the local market. Then I go to the local market and ask how much they would supply me. And then I put some extra. So they're getting paid a higher amount than they would get in their own climate. Because then that's encouraging the younger generation to get a better income from it. And that goes direct to those weavers. So there's no middlemen. I'm dealing directly with it, every person.
Tell me what the towns are like.
Okay, they're villages. There's no roads. They're dirt tracks. The houses are made from wood. Some of them are very beautiful. Some of them are made from wood and almost like wattle and daub. Similar structure to what you would have seen in the Middle Ages in Chester, where they use straw and mud, and then there'd be a wooden frame. Some of them are really beautiful. And then other ones are teak. There's nothing like a petrol station or a local shop. They sort of grow their vegetables and they have a cow in their backyard. When I went back the second time, they were so pleased to see me that they made a lunch and gave me the fresh milk from the newborn calf that morning, which is called the colostrum. I can honestly say it wasn't pleasant, but I had to go through the process, yeah. And because they were honouring me with that.
Wow. Yeah. How do they feel about you as a Western woman?
Well, that's a really interesting question. In Asia, they don't seem to have a problem with it. I mean, you know, I've just come back from working in Morocco. Well, that was a different kettle of fish doing stuff over there. I actually never saw a woman for the first 3 days. Well, But over in Burma, they treat me as an equal. And also they have this fascination that I'm out there travelling on my own. So they tend to be more relaxed with me than they probably would be with a man. They feel sort of safer with me. And obviously I have to respect all the customs, and I dress in their traditional dress. I don't go in my Western clothes. I wear a lingerie.
Yeah. Are you still based here? Do you still live in in this country?
Yeah. I'm very much so based still here, because when the goods arrive here in the UK, that's the second phase, and that's I've got to sell it. So I'm actually selling it, working in the warehouse, repacking it, doing all the marketing. I've got now a couple of agents working for me. We've got over 200 accounts now. We're shipping to Italy, France, Spain, as far as Japan. So, yeah.
Why are they so popular? What is so special about them?
They're completely unique. And I have a philosophy that I will only work with independents, and that's from the independent artisan all the way through to the independent retailer. I felt that the bigger accounts have had it too good for so long, and the independents were struggling. And the reason they were struggling was they were all selling the same goods. So I kept getting stopped all the time. As you know, I'm like a bit unique with my fashions. And people were saying, oh, where did you get that from? Why can't we buy that? So I decided that it would be nice to be able to offer something to the independent retailers that's something unique and different. So if you go to the shops, you'll never see that same basket. Everyone's different.
Now, recently, we've just had the British Style Collective. You've been involved with it. First of all, how are you involved? And secondly, how's it gone down with the basket? Are they baskets?
Yes, they are baskets. The baskets we use for either shopping or for the beach. They're really popular as a beach basket. So that's hence why we sell quite a lot to Southern Europe.
You never give up. You never have given up. You've had lots of businesses over the years. You just mentioned Morocco. You just mentioned China. Can we ask what you were doing there?
In China? Oh, or Morocco?
Both.
Okay. China, I took a British company over to China. They wanted to do an exploratory exercise in seeing whether there was a market for their product. I took them over there and introduced their product to the Chinese market, did an exhibition, and came back for them with over 300 major supermarkets wanting to buy their product. But unfortunately, they never went ahead with it, which was very sad. Then this recent trip to Morocco, well, that was because I wanted to find some shoes. Now, we all know Morocco is famous for its slippers, but I knew that there were some special shoes being made in an area which is down by the Sahara. So I decided to go over there and try to find who was making them and see if I could bring them back, which, as you've probably been following, I've succeeded, and I've got them, and I've got all the artisans. It was quite difficult there because I couldn't photograph the women that were doing the embroidery side, because they won't allow you in to do that. And I took a photographer with me this time to do all the photography. And not only that, it turned out that he became very handy in the fact that I couldn't have done that on my own as a woman.
What drives you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm inquisitive. I want to see the world, and I can't afford to do it unless I'm doing something. So I think also, as you know, with my career, it's had its ups and downs. I haven't liked some of the things I've seen in the fashion industry, and I felt that it was time to give something back. So it's working in Burma is so rewarding, because when you get there and see the faces and you see what difference in 1 year it can make. One of my weavers has now bought his own piece of land and built his first house. I'm not sure about the anaglypta wallpaper, but what we think as being very small amount of money can make a huge difference to somebody's life. So that's probably what's driving me more now.
What I can't understand about you, never have, it's never simple with you. You can't go, you could be incredibly successful in this country with a business, but it can't be that. You have to go and find something that's a problem, that needs lots of paperwork. And because it is, isn't it? It's not easy.
No, it's not easy. I think I like those challenges. I'm a problem solver. So when there is a problem and somebody says, you can't do that, I don't believe in can't. So I will always find a way. And I think that's probably the exciting bit of finding a way of doing it. I need a challenge, constant challenge.
Do you hit many problems as a woman?
Yes, massive amounts. I mean, gosh, where do I start? that's probably made me as tough as I am. I've had sexist remarks, unbelievable amounts of problems. But, you know, if I sat there dwelling on that, I probably wouldn't go anywhere. As far as I'm concerned, it's like that's their problem, not mine.
Of all your businesses and all your success, where does this fit in with the bags? Are you more excited about this than anything?
Yeah, definitely. It's not about the money. It's about creating something and seeing it grow as quickly as it has done. That to me is what I enjoy probably the most. If I'd been driven by money, I'd be very wealthy by now, but I'm not.
Can people buy them online?
They can go onto the website, and we have got a stockist list on there, but we don't sell direct. Yeah. I basically haven't got the time to do that. But some of my retailers do have online sales.
Yeah, give us a brief resume of the things you've done, because you weren't you selling children's clothes in Sweden, or you've done so much.
Well, I started off with a sandwich round. I had the first sandwich round in Chester. I used to go round with a basket. So we'd fall out of the nightclubs at 5 a.m, go and pick up the bread, make the sandwiches. And then I went away and I came across a backpack, which was a soft toy that was a monkey. And I don't know, we're going back 30-odd years now. So some people won't remember it, some will. And I started these craze of these animal backpacks. And as anything, with crazes, they come in and you get copied. So I was copied then by the Koreans. So I stopped doing that. And I was approached by another company, which was an American company. And they were the first people to do accessories and use Velcro. And they were in the 80s, so everything was quite fluorescent. Built that company, and then I ended up working for Quiksilver, and I was their sales manager in the UK. In those days, there were no females really in the surf industry. They hadn't even developed Roxy as a women's surf brand then. Worked with them for a number of years, and then went to work with another surf company called Simmerstyle, which was Dutch. From there, I then went set up an American diner.
I didn't know about that one.
Oh, no. that was in Midhurst. And again, I was a bit too forward thinking because I came up with the idea of doing organic meats and everything was homemade. So that, again, it was down to the attention to detail of the quality of the food and things. And I sold that after 18 months, which because I took it on when it was a failing business. And then I came back up here and moved back up to the Wirral, and I had to start again from scratch. So I got a job working for a company in Manchester. Didn't particularly like it, and I won't mention any names, but it then gave me the drive to go back to the sports industry. And I got approached by a company in Holland, and they were a tiny little hat brand. They were called Barts. And I took that company in 6 years to doing 2.5 million, wow, just on knitted hats here in the UK. I came out of that in 2010, and then obviously went travelling took a break, and then I had my accident.
The baskets, did you find them by accident?
Yeah, totally.
How?
Yeah. Going off the beaten track when you're not supposed to in Burma, and that's how I found them.
And what made you fall in love with them straight away?
The colours. The colours, the fact that they aren't really like anything you've seen before. And they sort of look like they should be in a design museum in maybe a Scandinavian country. Hence why I'm supplying now quite a lot of the art galleries and museums. I've been supplying them to the Turner Gallery and I'm trying to think what the other one, British Museums. So quite a lot of galleries have taken them because they could see in them what I can see.
And so, tell us again what they're made of.
They're made from recycled plastic strapping that goes around pallets. And in this country, we only see it in grey. But in Asia, it comes in all sorts of colours.
Are you really excited about this product?
Yeah, totally.
To finish off, some advice, and take as long as you want over this. You're a woman who's had ups and downs, but you've always been successful. I still can't get my head round the fact that women earn less money than men. I'll never understand that as long as I live, especially when I meet people like you. What advice would you give to women that are listening right now that want to do and be who you are?
What advice? Don't worry about what people think and just go out there and do what you believe in because you'll make it happen. If you worry about what people are thinking or what people are saying to you, then you'll get bogged down with all of that negativity. And I tend not to listen to anybody and just do what I want to do.
Biggest mistake you've ever made in business?
Oh, gosh, loads.
Just one.
I don't know.
Right. Most exciting thing you've ever done?
Most exciting. It's all the time it's exciting. The travel. I think the travel is the most exciting. Not knowing what's going to be around the next corner and what hurdles are going to be in my way. I mean, it's not always easy. I mean, I had an incident in Morocco, in Marrakesh this time, which was quite frightening. But, you know, at least it happened on the last day of the trip and not at the beginning, because otherwise I probably wouldn't have got round. I just go with my heart and do what feels right and natural. Go on my six senses, really.
Where can people see these bags now? Is there an online article on them or...?
I've got a website, which is Moogs, spelt MOWGS.com.
I think you're an inspiration. I think it's great you live up here still. I think it's fabulous that you've travelled the world. I'm really glad you came through the accident because we were all incredibly worried about you because it was a bad one, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was. It was bad. I had to lie holding my leg as a splint from 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon while I, with the other hand, was phoning up the insurance company in London, screaming at them to organise a helicopter from Manila to get to the island. And they couldn't envisage the situation I was in. So they were saying, well, just get yourself to a hospital. And I'm saying, there isn't one here. I'm incredibly lucky. It was a wake-up call. And I take it a bit more seriously now when I travel and don't push it so much.
Do you have problems with your injury?
I do. I have problems with my back now permanently, but I refuse to take painkillers because at the end of the day, you know, it's better to feel the pain and it reminds you than...
Only you could say that. Michelle Simpson, I've wanted to do this interview for so long and I finally pinned you down in between countries. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Pete. Thanks.